Notice that the banners that we brought back from Brazil are on the picture of Belo with the building in the center is on the Lord's table. We're so thankful to have all of you here this evening and especially welcome our visitors. We're in the process of beginning to read through the Bible in 1990. Our lesson this morning was taken from the first few chapters of Genesis. We're suggesting that you read 5 chapters from the New Testament on Sundays and 3 chapters a day the other 6 days of the week, which means that you should be reading Matthew 1 through 5 today and chapters 19 through 36 during the coming week. Next Sunday morning, our lesson will be taken from Matthew 4, and it will be entitled, You Never Mentioned Him to Me. Someone made a suggestion a few weeks ago that perhaps we need a lesson on the importance of teaching people about Christ. And our lesson will center around that next week. The following week, we'll probably deal with the financial matters of the congregation and take that from a chapter a little bit later in Matthew. But we want to encourage you to read through the Bible during 1990. Let me mention to you just a fact or two about the financial matters of the congregation as a means of introduction to our lesson tonight. You'll notice that our figure in the Belo work has dropped to 7,750. We're bringing that down to getting close to zero, and we think within just a few weeks we'll see that drop completely. We appreciate so much. That means that we've raised somewhere almost $280,000 since October of 1988. You'll also heard that our budget figure has been changed today from 5,000 to 5,300. Our budget last year was $5,000. That was our basic budget goal. Our basic was $1,000,000. You take into consideration the extra contributions that we gave for Belo and other things, we probably gave somewhere around $5,700 a week during last year. And so the $5,300 is realistic. In fact, we hope to present a challenge to the congregation to even go above that and do additional mission work and benevolent work during the year. But we'll have more to say about that in the next few weeks. We're just so thankful for the response that you have given. We have given more in this past year than any year previously, I think, and we have spent more. In fact, because of the additional work in mission work and benevolent work and some unexpected developments relative to our building and grounds, we really closed out the year being just a little bit in the hole as far as our bank account is concerned. And so we have really done a lot of good work in the past year, and 1990 can be an even greater year. Our lesson tonight in the series of paradoxical lessons is the way to invest and to receive is to give. Those of you who are here regularly will remember that we've been studying now on Sunday evenings for several weeks on lessons that we've called paradoxes, and we have a few more of these planned. A fellow was driving down the road in his brand new Cadillac. He stopped by the side of the road. There was a little barefoot boy standing there. He walked up to the side and said, Mister, that's a mighty nice car. The fellow who was driving said, Yes, my brother gave it to me. The little boy said, I wish I, and the fellow in the car thought he was going to finish that sentence by saying, I wish I had a brother like that, but instead the little boy said, I wish I could be a brother like that. I think that little boy had a mature idea that all of us need to understand.
We talk a great deal about material things, and necessarily so. Money is involved in most everything that we do. We need to admit that. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. Money is a medium of exchange. We're involved with material things. We think about material things when we think about our homes and the houses in which we live. We think about material things when we think about college. And I suppose as you're registered in the next few days, you'll realize that you need to think about material things. We think about material things when it comes to the work of the church. All the things in which we're involved, in a sense, usually involve some monies or material things. And you know I'm thankful for that. Sometimes we as parents complain about how much our children cost. I read a little article back several years ago that caused me to change my thinking along that line, and I think I've been able to say very little as far as complaining about what my children cost since I read that article. He reported a conversation between some adults. One father was complaining about how much his daughter cost. Oh, I have to pay this much for her clothing and this much for other things, and now she's going to school and it's going to cost this much. And she's going on to college and I'm going to have to come up with thousands of dollars. I tell you, it's just something every day she costs so much. Another man standing by looked over at him and said, "My daughter doesn't cost a penny. We buried her 10 years ago. I've tried since that time to never complain about what one of my children cost." I think that idea, and if we can understand that idea, helps us to put into focus what we're talking about tonight. Folks, the way to invest and the way to receive is really to give. It is more blessed to give than to receive, Jesus said, as reported in Acts 20, 35. He said in another passage in Matthew 6, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through and steal." Some of you that are here tonight lived through the 30s. You remember the Great Depression. You remember the day that the banks lost just about everything that was there. I've had my grandparents tell me about some people that they knew that at that time had quite a few dollars in the bank. And when all this happened, they lost everything that they had. They had been investing, and yet they lost everything that they had. In the last few years, in the last decade, we've seen several banks close. We've heard much said about the savings and loans institutions in this country. We remember that not long ago there was a day in the stock market when it almost crashed again, or at least went down so much, and there were those talking about how much they had lost on that one day. Now, these are people that are thinking about investments, and yet in many instances these investments were lost. It's not uncommon to hear a report of a fire that burns a house to the ground. And sometimes the report will include there was no insurance. They lost everything they had. Someone has spent years and years putting dollars and dollars into the building of a house, and then in a moment, it is gone. The way to really invest in an investment that will last is not necessarily the way that we approach it. When we invest in people, when we invest in friends, when we invest in our families, and when we invest in God's work, we're investing in a way that no stock market crash, no failure of a bank, no failure of a savings and loan, no hurricane, no earthquake, nothing of that matter can take away our investment. And in each of those cases about which we're talking, really the way to invest is to give. It's not wrong for us to think about money matters. God's book teaches about that. It's certainly not wrong for those of us who are responsible as husbands and parents to make plans to take care of the responsibilities of those that depend upon us. One who will not provide for his own is even called an infidel, or worse than an infidel. It is not wrong for us to plan ahead. God did not teach us in James that it was wrong for us to say that we will go into such a city and buy and sell and get gain. He said it's wrong to say it without taking into consideration God's will. I am not suggesting by any stretch of the imagination tonight that it is wrong for us to save for the rainy day. I would encourage all young parents to begin saving for the education of their children as early as possible. And certainly these ideas of investment are part of the American way of life. The American way of life where you and I live as Christians and must take into consideration the culture and the factors that are involved in those cultures. And I'm not suggesting in any way that it is wrong for us to invest in an honest and reasonable way. But what I am suggesting is
that there is a higher type of investment. And that really, if we're going to invest in that which matters, and if we're going to be able to receive that which we really need, that we need to concentrate on giving and giving out to others. I want us to think for just a few minutes tonight, especially in three areas of thought. One is among the members of our families, in our relationship to our friends, and as far as the Lord's work is concerned. All of us who are parents tonight realize that there is a great deal of investment that goes into the rearing of a child. I don't know how much it is now. There have been statistics reported that to take a child from the time that he is born until he is able to be on his own runs into certainly hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, I'm not for sure that any of us won't see that figure at the same time on paper, all of it added into the same figure. We are going to invest in our children if we rear them in the right way. But that is an investment where we are giving and where we are putting out to help them to grow in the right way, an investment where we're going to receive. And if we invest in our families, in our children in the right way, we're going to receive dividends back that are much bigger than those which we put into the development of them. There is the pleasure that's involved in seeing our own boys and girls grow up and develop into successful people, to be able to accomplish something in life. What is there that you could purchase today? What is there where you could invest your money that can bring you more pleasure than being able to bring up a young boy or a young girl into adulthood, to know that you have had a part in their development as a parent, and to see them be successful in life, spiritually and otherwise? I just don't believe that there's any satisfaction that's any greater than that. John, the apostle of love, in both 2 John and 3 John, mentioned that he was so encouraged by seeing his children do well. He may not even have been talking about his own children personally there, but talking about those who were his children in the faith. And he said to see them do well and accomplish something is such an encouragement. When we reach out and give and invest in our children and bringing them up in the right way, we're going to have the pleasures that will come back to us as parents. And then, in addition to that, if we invest in them and bring them up in the right way, we're going to have them there to help us when we need them perhaps the most. Because if there is the right relationship and the investment in our children as they grow up, to where we not only invest money but instill in them the attitudes that they ought to have, then when we get older and need some care for us, they're going to be there to return in our direction that which we need. Not only that, but to be channels through which blessings from us can flow through them even to the next generation. And this process continues on and on. I suggest to you that the best way to receive the blessings that we can enjoy in family circles, and the best way to invest what we have in this life, is to invest it in our families. There's nothing on this earth that means more to me than having four children tonight that are Christians and serving the Lord, successful enough to at least have food on the table. Sometimes I think Judy and I have to help a little bit with the dessert, but successful enough to at least meet the basic needs of life. I don't know of any bank account or any mansion that has ever been built that could bring me personally more pleasure than that. And I would especially ask those of you that are younger parents to think about this. Those of you who are expecting new babies and who have the babies in your laps tonight and the smaller boys and girls, let me emphasize to you that the way to receive from the investment is to give. To give in the needs and to give of yourselves in the rearing and the development of your children. I believe the same thing is true as far as our friends are concerned. I heard Brother Marshall Keeble say several times, I'd rather have friends than money if my friends have money. I think if he had stopped that sentence even in the middle, it would have had meaning. Those of you that remember Brother Keeble remember the kind of life that he had. And in fact, if I understand it, Brother Keeble was supported for several years in his life by Brother Burton in Nashville. Brother Burton's son was a member of the congregation where I preached previously. Here was a man who was dedicated to the Lord's service, Brother Keeble, Brother Burton too in his own way, but Brother Keeble in preaching the gospel. And he realized that there was so much that could come from friendship. He had built those friendships over the years. I've seen it happen many times, and I'm sure you have too. That someone has spent his entire life giving of himself and giving of his means to his friends, reaching out into the community, helping in any way that he could, almost to the point that he had very little left for himself. But something developed that he had a great need. Those friends rallied to his needs and saw that every need that he had was cared for at the time of the need. Read a little interesting story some time back about an area where there were several dairy farmers. There were about 40 different farmers in the area, as I remember the story goes. And each one of those farmers had something like 30 to 50 cows that they were milking in their dairy business. One of the farmers was noted for just doing everything that he could to help others. He'd spent his entire life reaching out to help them, to advise the others, and to give of himself and to give of his means to help all these other farmers be successful. This man on one occasion lost every cow that he had because of a disease that hit his herd. Lost every cow that he had. One of the other farmers called a meeting of the rest, and he said, this man has given of himself to us down through the years. I want to suggest that each one of us give him one cow. And each of the 40 farmers gave him one cow, and he had his herd back intact again. Maybe even a few more than he'd had to begin with. In a way that it didn't really hurt the others that much. But the principle is he'd spent his life giving. He'd spent his life reaching out and helping others. And when the time came that he was down and needed help, the others were there to come back and to bring back to him the blessings that he needed. He'd been investing all along, not just for that purpose. But he'd been investing all along as he'd been reaching out to help his friends and reaching out to encourage them and reaching out to do them good. And when he had a need, the friends were there to rally. I think that's really what Brother Keeble had in mind when he said, I'd rather have friends than money. When we are people related and people persons, and we spend our time and our money and our effort reaching out to seeing how many we can help, at that point we may be giving, and it may be going out, but eventually we will receive the benefits of it. And then as far as the Lord's work is concerned, that's true. During this past week or past month, you and I have had income. We've had to make a decision of how much we would place in the Lord's collection plate on Sunday, how much we would keep for ourselves. Maybe we made decisions that we would give some of the rest of it to others and other good causes. If everything were wiped out here in Henderson tonight, what money is there that you and I made last week that cannot be taken away from us? I have a few dollars in my billfold tonight, but that could be stolen, and I wouldn't have it again. I have a few dollars in the bank, but something could happen that the banks would close and I could lose that. I hope that doesn't happen. Don't expect it in our economy right now, but it could. Everything that I have kept for myself and invested in physical things like that could be taken from me immediately. But what I have put into the Lord's work by giving on the Lord's Day and in other ways, and have placed in the bank account in heaven, there's not a power on earth that can take it away from me. And it will be there for me. It will be there as a part of my account that God keeps. And I certainly don't mean to suggest that we can buy salvation. We cannot. We cannot merit it. We receive it by the grace of God. But I am suggesting that what you and I give and invest in the Lord's work, and what we give and send to other places to preach the gospel, and what we give to help the needy and to help the widows and the orphans, what we invest in that sense and give is where we're really going to receive. Let me share with you two passages of Scripture that especially point that out. One of them is the passage that we've already quoted from Matthew 6. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth. Lay them up where? Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. All that you and I give of our money and our time and our efforts, not only on the Lord's Day, and all of us ought to try to give cheerfully and lovingly on the Lord's Day, but in everything that we give to promote the Lord's work and to promote good things by serving people and serving God through that, is laid up in heaven. And we'll receive in that sense that nobody can take it from us. But in addition to that, there's a passage over in the book of Malachi, chapter 3, verses 8 through 10, that illustrates this principle. It's in that passage where that favorite question is asked that you've heard quoted so many times, will a man rob God? And then he says, you have robbed me in your tithes and your offerings. But it's in that next verse or so that there's such a great principle. God said, let me tell you something, and I want you to prove me. And as far as I know, this is the only place that I can find in the Bible where God said, I want you to prove me. He said, I want you to prove me. You bring your tithes and offerings into my house as you should, and I promise you that the windows of heaven will open so that you cannot even use all the blessings that you will receive. Now, I wonder sometimes if we really believe that. The same Bible that teaches baptism for the remission of sins teaches that. Same Bible that gives us the plan of worship that we follow teaches that. Same Bible that gives us the organization of the church teaches that. And I wonder if we really believe it. It's in the Old Testament, but it's a principle. The law was specific to them concerning tithes and offering, but the principle of their giving to God, and God saying, I'll open up the windows of heaven so that the blessings will be greater than you can use, is a principle that did not change when the law of Moses was nailed to the cross. God said, you prove me and try me. You put me first. We sang a few minutes ago, seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and these things shall be added to you. And that's another verse I wonder if we really believe. That verse doesn't mean there in Matthew 6:33 that we just never do anything from a financial standpoint and we never use any business principles. It doesn't mean to cast all the responsibility on God, but it means to put our faith in God and seek him first and put him first. Do you think we always do that? Isn't it possible that we allow ourselves to become so involved in the material things of this earth that we don't put God first? And that we've allowed ourselves to become so interested in the investments in this life that we're not investing in that life that is to come. And isn't that the reason, based on these principles, that we have so many of the problems that we have? If I were to ask you tonight to make a list of the rich men that you remember in the Bible, who would be on that list? Probably the rich young ruler would be there. What was his life worth? He went away sorrowful. As far as we know, never really became a follower of Christ. He was rich. You probably would list the rich man and the story of the rich man and Lazarus. Would you want to live a life after that example? You probably would list the rich man who had such a great harvest and tore down his barns to build bigger barns to take care of that harvest. The man who, to whom God said, thou fool, tonight thy soul shall be required of thee. Those are the three rich men that come to mind as far as the Bible's concerned as I think about it tonight, and neither one of them is really a model. Neither one of them is really rich in the true sense of the word. If I were to start listing rich men that I've heard about as far as this life is concerned, I'd probably put Howard Hughes as one of those. And I'm told that there was practically no one at his funeral. And about all that I've ever heard since he died is how many people were trying to get a piece of what he had. What was his life worth? He had invested in the material things of this life. The rich young ruler, the rich man in the story of the rich man in Lazarus, the rich man who tore down his barn, all of these were thinking more in terms of investing in the things of this life. And the end result was not what it needed to be. But think of the man, Barnabas, who was willing to sell what he had and to give it to help other people. Where do we place him tonight when we start thinking about the Biblical Hall of Fame? Think about Jesus, who came and laid down his life and gave everything that he had. Think about those in Macedonia that were referred to in 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. They first gave themselves, and he says they gave in poverty. And here, almost 2,000 years later, we're talking about them. Because they realized that the way to receive and the way to really invest in an investment that cannot be taken from you is to give. Most of us tonight are living by one of two philosophies. We're either living to get or we're living to give. If we're living to get, our lives are going to be filled with disappointments. If we're living to give, our lives will be filled with enough blessings to overcome any disappointment. We need to learn to invest in our families. We need to learn to invest in our friends. We need to learn to invest in the Lord's work. And then we will receive the greatest dividends and benefits from those blessings that anybody can receive. That's what I mean when I entitled the lesson, "The Way to Invest and the Way to Receive is to Give." Someone put it like this: what I spent, I once had. What I kept, I lost. What I gave, I have. The way to receive is to give. And the way to receive the greatest blessing of all is to give the greatest gift that you can give to God Himself. And that is you yourself. If you're not a Christian, you need to give yourself to God tonight in obedience. If you're a wayward child of His, you need to give yourself to Him again, because the greatest way to give, to receive is to give. The greatest way to receive is to give yourself to God. If you need to do that, come right now as together we stand and sing.
Would you be free from the burden of sin and power in the blood?
Power in the blood. Would you or evil a victory win? There's wonderful power in the blood. There is power, power, wonder-working power in the blood of the Lamb. There is power.